voice and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. We are less than a week away from Title 42 expiring, and the expectation even from the administration is going to be a mass uptick in the number of border crossers. In the month of April, there were 234,088 migrants that were contacted by Border Patrol and ICE at our southern border. That is a 100-year-old record. That's the most people in a century crossing our border. The Supreme Court has limited how illegal immigrants can appeal deportation rulings. That makes it a little bit easier to deport people. But if you have an administration that is not going through that process, we know that that is the number of arrests and deportations have gone down. So how do we deal with this issue? I started earlier by talking about the Afghan refugees. Afghan citizens who helped the U.S. now waiting in limbo for visa approval months after being evacuated. This is where I have such an issue with the border because of what it deteriorates into the minute we start to talk about the border and this us against them mentality, and people are not listening to each other. Anybody on the opposite side of the political aisle from me that believes that there is a xenophobic bone in my body, you don't know me and you don't listen, and you must think I am a complete liar because I have been an advocate for legal immigration for as long as I've been alive. I grew up among immigrants my whole life. I don't claim, I don't know, and I think that's why we need people coming into this country. We need immigrants. I don't know what it's like to be an immigrant, but I've worked with many people that are some of the kindest, nicest, hardest working, smartest people I've ever met, living the American dream in one generation, the Cuban families that I know, working with my friends, my best friend growing up, his father owned packing houses. He was from Mexico. Both of his parents are from Mexico. He was born here, but his father owned a business. It's called a packing house. It's where produce is picked in the fields. It's brought into a packing house, and tomatoes are what we packed. And so I worked on the packing machine. I worked in the migrant fields for a summer where they picked the tomatoes. And the process is one that is really hard work. You pick in these big buckets, and you carry two buckets at a time to save time, and you carry them over to what's like a big dumpster. And we would be sitting on the edge of the dumpster. They would bring us the full containers. We would dump them into the bins, and then we would put a coin in the bottom of the bucket for each one of the buckets they carried. And at the end of the day, tokens, they would take those tokens, they would cash those tokens in, and they would be paid cash for it. And that's how they earned a living. And then in the packing houses, the tomatoes were put into a machine where they were cleaned and they were sized. And you culled out the bad tomatoes and threw them away, and they were put in boxes according to their sizes, and then they were inspected by the Department of Agriculture, loaded on trucks, and taken to the grocery stores. I've done that work. I've seen it. I admire the hard work of a first-generation immigrant, understanding that they are going to work so hard to make sure their children have an opportunity to a better life, and that's exactly what they've done. And I have a huge admiration for it. And I think we need more of it. And I think we need better examples than we have right now. Right now, there is such a rift between immigrants and between, say illegal immigrants, let's say, and everyday society, because we welcome people that do it the right way. How many of us have ever seen a naturalization ceremony or seen the news stories of people being sworn in as new citizens to this country and how proud we are to see people that renounce their citizenship and they become Americans? Well, you know, we admire that. We honor it. So mixing legal and illegal immigration has always been a problem for me. What we have at our border right now is chaos. And the only people benefiting right now are the cartels. The drugs that are pouring over the border, they are selling to the American people. There's enough fentanyl confiscated on a daily basis that could kill every one of us. It is a drug that is horrible. And it's a poison. It's not even really a drug. It's a poison. We can't get our arms around it because we are so devastated and overwhelmed by the human traffic that's at our border. The idea of this administration saying that this was going to be a more humane way to treat people at the border, you're not treating anybody more humanely. All the stories of people that are being packed into trucks and coming across the border and all of these other things, this is not a more humane way to treat people. Now factor in the numbers of people, the huge numbers of people 10% is what the number has been. 10% of the asylum claims that we are dealing with in this country right now are legitimate. 90% of those claims are illegitimate. These are people that are gaming our system. They're being told by the cartels what to say. They're demanding an asylum hearing. They're getting a hearing pretty quickly in which a court date is given to them or a hearing date is further. So it's almost like, you know, they're just going into a courtroom and being arraigned. They're given cell phones as tracking devices. And they're being sent out into the streets of America in limbo, sometimes for 5 and 6 years. Why should the 10% of legitimate asylum seekers, the people that are seeking refuge in the United States, why should they have to wait between what is the estimate now, 4 and 6 years for their hearing? The answer is they shouldn't. So when you talk about humane treatment, exactly who is being treated humanely? The controversy about baby formula, I will tell you, this is an American thing. If we allow people here, we should be giving them baby formula. So then the answer is we should make them stay where they are. If they come into this country, we have an obligation. We take on those obligations. That's what Americans do. But here we are with a shortage for American babies, and this administration is doing nothing about unaccompanied children or children being brought in by their family members. And we're shipping pallet loads and pallet loads and pallet loads of what we're in short supply of to a group of people that should not be here. And what that does is it also raises the anger and the vitriol toward those people. And I understand that the plight of many of these people, they're in such dire circumstances. But that doesn't mean you circumvent American laws, put American towns on the border at a disadvantage because we are seeing food banks and 911 calls. And we are seeing systems overwhelmed in what are not rich communities on our borders anyway. And all of it is avoidable if there were policy changes in this administration. And they absolutely refuse. There are solutions and humane solutions to our border issues. We have jobs and so many jobs that people aren't doing. We could have a visa system up and running very quickly. If you remember, just a quick side note on this. If you remember when the VA scandal happened and veterans were not getting the care they need and the paperwork was being changed at the VA here in Phoenix and around the country, and it was exposed that management was in on this. What they came up with was the Veterans Choice Card originally, and it was a card that allowed there were certain circumstances, but if you were a veteran and you couldn't get care within a timely fashion at the VA closest to you, you could go to a doctor outside of the VA system, and that doctor could give you care. It was to expedite the problem. It was to get rid of the overload in the VA system for a while until the system was made better. That was ramped up fairly quickly when it comes to government work. It was ramped up fairly quickly, believe it or not, John McCain and Bernie Sanders worked on that card. And it was done by a company here. It was implemented by a company here in Arizona called TriWest Healthcare Alliance. And they used to implement the insurance for the military. The reason why I bring that up is when you see a crisis, there are ways to get things done quickly. The government could be working on this quickly where we could get the good people that want to come here a legal path to working in this country, helping our economy, helping the economy of their family and the people around them. And they could do this quickly, but they don't. We hear this ridiculous fight and we have people pouring across our border and everybody's angry at each other. Solutions. We should be looking at solutions. What, if anything, could be done to stop what happened in Buffalo, New York, before it happened? Were there signs that people closest to this shooter should have seen? We'll talk about that coming up in a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. You know, there is going to be a backlash, and there should be, when you have someone that makes crass and heartless and, I think, thoughtless statements like we did with that Wendy Rogers. Not the first time she's done it. Wendy Rogers is a senator from Northern Arizona in the Arizona State Legislature. And what she said about the shootings, alluding to at least the appearance of what it is, she tweeted out, "Fed boy summer has started in Buffalo." Now, Fed boy summer is believed to be, and I think it's a pretty good conclusion, and maybe we're all wrong, and I'm anxious to hear what her response is to this, is there was a quote from that. Remember the neo-Nazi group that was doing that thing that she spoke at? They called it White Boy Summer. There was a guy named Nick Fuentes that coined the phrase White Boy Summer going back to last year. So she called it Fed Boy Summer. And what it appears that she is saying is that these are federal agents. It was also something that they said about, you know, when you talk about mind control in the CIA, she also alluded to the fact that when these white supremacist people were doing things, that it wasn't actually the people that were at these events. It was federal agents that were infiltrating their group and making them all look bad. Now, you can believe that if you want. To you, that, you know, to me is just outrageous. You know, just when you, when, if I'm going to sit here in this chair, which I did, and I'm going to criticize Black Lives Matter infiltrators, and I'm not saying government agents, people that took over that movement to commit acts of violence instead of allowing people to peacefully have their voices heard about something they wanted to do wrong. If I called those people out, then these people need to be called out. And you can blame it on government conspiracies and CIA mind control. You can do all of that. But when just hours after this shooting happened in Buffalo, for you to put out statements like this, you should have to answer for it, because she represents a district. She represents the state legislature. This is a nationwide story. Imagine the people in Buffalo, New York, reading this nonsense. And that's what it is. It's you just politicized and use conspiracy theories in order to promote your beliefs over the sadness that is being felt in a community after a shooting happened. Period. That's what's happening here. And if you're going to have to answer, you should answer to it. And I will tell you, I think every Republican, and thankfully, they voted by an overwhelming margin to do an investigation, an overwhelming margin. And as a political party, the Republican Party has to stand up. I think this goes both ways politically. This message is what I've said before, is that when someone on your side does something outrageous, you have to be the loudest voice in calling it out, because they are equating her thinking to your thinking. She is a part of your group, whether good, bad, or indifferent, fair or unfair. That is the way people think. If you're a Suns fan at the game and you start a fight with a Dallas fan, and you're in the, you know, you're at the game in Dallas, it looks like Suns fans behaving badly. The LA Dodgers had a reputation of being violent. Now, come on, there were people that started fights, but do you think that the tens of thousands of people in that stadium were violent? No, but the fan base got a reputation because of the behavior of a few. And unless you are the ones that denounce the message, then you are someone that's going to be lumped in. But more than anything else, this should devastate us all. We're going to argue about gun control, and we should. We're going to argue about mental health issues and what can be done to fix these problems, and we should. But if our initial inclination is to post about some conspiracy theory and political agenda instead of deep sadness for the loss of life, there's something wrong with us. I called out the gun control advocates. When Sandy Hook happened, the immediate response for gun control and politicizing this, I called it outrageous and disgusting, because I was sad that a classroom full of kids was gunned down and what those parents must have gone through. First and foremost, we should be mourning the loss of life and the fact that this kid seemed to have made threats before and nobody saw the warning signs and he was able to commit this heinous act. That should be our first inclination, to hug our kids, to hug each other, especially since this was racially motivated. Why aren't we reaching across racial aisles and talking to our friends about how horrible this is and having a conversation with people to build up each other, to comfort each other in a horrible, horrible situation? Instead, you've got a politician elected to office using her platform to spout out conspiracy theories. She has a right to believe them, but is the timing the right thing? Or is it completely and utterly insensitive to do? That's my question. I don't care which political leaning you have. If you're going to do things like this, and this is not the first time, at what point do people back away and say, you are on your own? We don't want anything to do with those things. When does it happen? You know, and for me, that's where the issue is in this. Not that her opinion is, I don't agree one bit about what her opinion is. Not one bit. She has a right to feel it. But we do have to question people's actions, especially when they represent us and our state legislator. You know, the national headline is Arizona state legislator said this. Arizona Republican legislator said this. You are representing other people. I come on this show and I give my opinion, but I'm doing it on KTAR's radio station. And if I say something outrageous, the radio station's going to respond because I represent their brand. And we all have to recognize that. And it made me sick to my stomach. Anytime I hear about this senseless loss of life, whether it's a weekend in Chicago or it's a shooting in Buffalo, it makes me sick to my stomach that it's happening. And the response to be political like that from an elected official needs to be answered for. And it needs to be answered for right away. I'm going to talk about the baby formula shortage, what may be happening to rectify that situation, and what can parents do in the meantime. All that's coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. One of the big issues that we've seen is the baby formula shortage. The baby formula factory, Abbott, and the FDA have reached an agreement to restart production. And it's interesting what people say. Valley moms search for formula, turn to social media. Help for Arizona parents struggling to find baby formula. These are all headlines. This is a major issue for young families. And this was interesting that Bette Midler, who, by the way, I don't have any love lost for Bette Midler. You know, I think when you have people that are that claim, my problem is when people claim to be loving and caring and inclusive, and they're just angry. She has proven herself to be an angry person. Anyone who disagrees with her, she is angry. And I don't know her. She called me out on stage once. That was interesting. I had some friends were at her show, and I guess she has a front person that goes an advanced person. And there's a part of her show where she comes out dressed like a witch from a play she did, and she sings and stuff. And then what she does is she caters or tailors that part of the show to local people that she wants to call out about casting spells on people and stuff. And my name was one of them, and I thought it was hilarious. I wish I could have talked to her about it, because I was honored. I thought, oh, good. I must have made it if Bette Midler's calling me out from the stage in a local event. But she tweeted out about this topic. Try breastfeeding, all in capital letters. It's free and available on demand. Anybody out there that has had children understands what a crass and absolutely foolish thing that was to say. That if a parent could, they probably would. And in many cases, parents can't. So this is an issue. When we talk about schools, I say if there's one thing that motivates a parent to become an activist is if and when you do something that affects their child. If there is one thing that is going to do anything here that is going to motivate people, it is going to be the formula shortage. So I want you to hear a couple of things. The Surgeon General on CNN was asked when parents can expect to be able to get more formula.
What date do you think that parents who are not able to get formula right now will be able to get it?
Well, Alison, I certainly understand that pain, the concern. And if you are a parent whose child is on specialty formula, and you should talk to your doctor, your OBGYN, or your child's pediatrician about what the alternative options in terms of formula should be. A number of physicians' offices also can carry samples as well, and you can check with your doctor's office to see if they have samples.
And that's all true. And parents are exhausting every opportunity or every option that they have. And I know, and I was talking about this last week about it being behind glass, and I guess it's been behind glass for quite a long time. I wouldn't know that because I haven't had young children around me in a very, very long time. But when parents are showing up at the grocery store and looking for a specific formula and they're out, you've got parents going all over town or online or in other places trying to get the formula they need for their children. This is something that is scaring the heck out of parents. You understand that early nutrition is so key to the growth and development of a child. And again, you can't hang everything around the neck of the Biden administration, and I'm certainly not doing that. But the optics of what's happening with formula going down to the border is something that people are angry about. And it's not just Republicans that are angry about it. American citizens are angry about it. Not because we're helping people in need, but because what we are doing is creating a problem at the border and making it worse. And it's going to get worse in 6 days. And in, on top of that, what we are doing is saying we are providing for the needs of these people. And part of that need is baby formula. So we are shipping this to the border while American parents are scrambling to find it. If you don't understand why that makes some parents angry, you're just too politically motivated. It shouldn't be a part of the equation. It should not be a part of the equation. So, you know, we are in a very difficult place when it comes to some of these supply chain issues. But this one, I think, is really hitting home with people. Why is this happening? What happened with this company that had to shut down? And, you know, how quickly are they going to be able to ramp up production to get parents the formula that they need? This is a national security issue. When you have a health issue with newborn and infant and toddler children, when you have an issue like this with them, it's not as simple as try breastfeeding. It's feeding. It's free and available on demand. It is a horribly obtuse thing to say. And when you make a statement like that, you look like a fool. You look like a fool. And we have to start looking at things like this. When a crisis like this happens, we have to look at it and say, what do we do as a country to make sure it doesn't happen again? How do we avoid this kind of damage next time? So when another company shuts down or there's a shortage somewhere, it doesn't affect the American people as severely the next time. That's always, sometimes that's the best you can make. That's the silver lining on a dark cloud, is assessing the situation for what it is and figuring out a way to diminish the fallout if it happens again, or to eliminate the fallout if it happens again. And let's just hope that that's what's going to happen. Saying try breastfeeding is just, again, it's somebody that, I don't know if she has kids, but it doesn't look like she has. And what's interesting about that topic is when you talk about, this is somebody who, and somebody else pointed this out, it wasn't me that pointed it out, this is someone who has a huge following from the gay community. And what about gay couples that have kids, that have adopted kids? Nah, not a solution for them. It's just obtuse, and I thought it was just a horrible thing to say. It was terrible. Coming up here in just a couple of moments, we're going to talk about mental health, struggling teens in the Phoenix area, and what we can do to help these children make sure that they can get to better days. That's coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. I appreciate you spending some time with me. Big story in the news this week is about the uptick in suicides of young people in our community. And I think it's heartbreaking for adults to see that level of depression or a really, I don't know what else to say, of hopelessness in young people, realizing that, you know, it's difficult. There's, all of us, I think, have gone through times in our life of darkness, times when we feel very, very sad. But to have a young person, when we see it from our perspective, I spoke at a graduation. I'm going to talk more about it in the next hour. I spoke at a graduation last night, and I'm speaking at another one tonight, high school, and it's a promotion ceremony for the kids at EVIT, the East Valley Institute of Technology. And to see the future on the faces of those kids, to see when we look at them, we see nothing but potential and future. And I said to them, doing the math, I am 3 times older than the 18-year-olds that are sitting there. I'm 54. I am 3 times their age. How do we get here? You know, how do we ever get to this age? And but to look at them and where they are, how they see themselves sitting in those seats and how we see them sitting in those seats are two different things. We see a bright future. We see the sky is the limit. We see all of those things in them. But any problem they're suffering is real to them. It may seem small to you. I think that's part of it, is we go through parts in our life where at the time our problems feel overwhelming. But we realize if we persevere, somehow we get through them. They make us stronger. Many times they make us better. And many times they weren't nearly as bad as we thought they were. How do you say to a young person, as severe as I know you feel these problems are, do not take a permanent solution to a temporary problem? That sounds like a trite statement to make, but in the end, that's what it is. We understand what their life can be if they just hold on, if they just hang in there. But that doesn't mean that their problems are not real and overwhelming in their minds. How do we bridge that gap? What should we be doing as adults? Well, we have to set a good example. I think part of this is, you know, you go to your kids or go to children, we go to young adults and we say to them, how are you? That's a great first step. How many of us are willing to be transparent to our children and talk about times in our life where we didn't think we were going to make it, or we didn't think we wanted to make it, if that's the case for some people? Suicide has touched my family more times than I ever want to think about. I've lost some people that I admired that I thought, man, you had the world by the tail. You had everything a person could want. And yet they thought that the solution to their issues was to take their own life. That's sad, especially when, you know, you think about these young people that have so much to live for. So very quickly, there is a story about mental health. This is an AZ Family story about this topic.
Advocates in the Valley held a mental health town hall to raise awareness of the rise of teen suicides in Phoenix. Children today are growing up in an era where technology touches every aspect of our lives. On average, children spend up to 6 to 8 hours in front of a screen. The goal of the town hall was to prioritize adolescent mental health. Advocates shared signs to watch out for.
The things they used to enjoy, they don't enjoy anymore. That's a big one. Because when nothing is fun anymore, and you don't enjoy what you used to, nothing matters anymore.
In the last month, at least 5 high school students in the Valley have committed suicide.
You know, from a parent's perspective, that is a nightmare that they never want to live. And hopefully it's such a nightmare to you that it's something you're willing to do something about. I'm certainly not a mental health expert at all. I just understand that what has gotten me through hard times has been 2 things. Knowing that I'm not alone, number one, that there's somebody out there that cares about me sometimes more than I care about myself. And I've never had suicidal thoughts. I've not been to that dark place, although I've been to dark places. The second thing is feeling like I'm not the only one. That if somehow when you talk about PTSD and veterans, when veterans are reaching out to other veterans, there is an automatic connection there that others can't have. As much as we would love to try to be there for someone, there is an understanding from someone that's been there. And being able to know that you're not the only one sometimes gives you hope. Even if that person's in a bad place, even if that person says, I understand exactly how you're feeling, let me tell you what I'm going through. So those 2 things were what has gotten me through hard times. You know, when my business was failing, to have a friend whose business was in worse shape than mine at one time, and he was immensely successful and somebody I admire, for him to sit down and say, I know that this amount of money seems insurmountable, but I can promise you in a few years you're going to look back on this. And he was 100% right. I look back on that time in my life now, and I'm proud of the fact that I stayed diligent. I'm proud of the fact that I paid all my bills off. I'm proud of the fact that I didn't file bankruptcy. I'm proud of those things. But at the time, I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. It was something I felt was insurmountable. And I was in my 40s. Imagine facing something like that at a young age and feeling like you have nowhere to turn and no one understands. And you live in a social media world where it looks like at face value online, everybody's living their best life. It's isolation and it's sadness and it's depression and despair. And so for all the great things that social media is, it allows you to isolate, and then it allows you that sadness to sink in even deeper. So we've got to reach out, and we've got to be vulnerable and transparent. We've got to be willing to tell people where we've been. and where we are sometimes. If we're not willing to do that, we're going to see a lot more of this. And hopefully we can get a grip on this with real, honest conversations about times in our lives where we weren't at our best and where we didn't think we ever would be again. And I'm hoping that sooner rather than later. We had a great conversation with the chairman of the Board of Supervisors, Bill Gates, about a tax cut coming to homeowners, about a budget in the county, and helping people get jobs, train for jobs, and help them stay in their homes and build new homes and affordable housing. It was a great conversation. You're going to hear more about that coming up. So we're going to talk economy coming up here in just a moment. So please stick around.